Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. In this episode, we're going to look at the Italo-Turkish War. And we did a podcast a couple of weeks ago on the lull in tensions up to 1911, and then the resumption of tensions that year, which gave opportunity for Italy to launch a highly opportunistic war against the Ottoman Empire in order to seize the provinces that comprise present-day Libya. Now, in the previous podcast, we talked about how Europe's moment of declining tensions was interrupted in 1911 during the Second Morocco Crisis, or the Agadir Crisis, as it's also known. This was the second attempt by Germany under Kaiser Wilhelm II to intervene in the affairs of France in Morocco, and this time it had the potential of being a far quicker route to general European war. The British stood by once again by their French Entente partner and were willing to go to war with Germany, partly because of the previous half decade of naval tensions between the two, even though there had been some effort put in by Bethmann Hollweg into decreasing those tensions. The opportunity that was presented to Italy in this period of time, the distraction that the Morocco crisis presented, gave Italy an unrivalled chance to develop itself as a colonial power. Italy, only a nation state till 1870, was something of a latecomer to the colonial game, much as Germany had been, and both countries saw the acquisition of colonies. And this was not just a governmental position, but a broadly popular cultural one. The acquisition of colonies as part of the cementing of great power status, the particularly in Italy, the chaotic and divided nature of Italian society, both culturally, linguistically and economically between North and South, could empire could be the force that bound all that together. Italy saw influence in Libya and even colonial control over Libya as compensation for the acquisition of colonies by other European powers. In the previous podcast on in this theme, we talked about this idea that since 1885 and the Berlin Conference on Empire and Africa, there had been a precedent set that European powers, in order to prevent there being any objection to colonial expansion, such as, for example, in this example, France's expansion into Morocco, that European powers would agree to compensate one another, and their rival ambitions would be satiated by handing out and passing off of colonial territory. Italy saw Libya as its due compensation for agreeing to allow France to occupy and to become a full colonial power in Morocco. The French, of course, looked at the Italians, a secondary power within Europe, with somewhat disdain, and asked themselves, perhaps rationally, why it is that they should be compensating Italy. But in general, all powers were distracted. The French and the Germans were at loggerheads over Morocco. The British were readying for war with Germany. And Russia was highly anxious about the status of the Dardanelles Straits that led from the Mediterranean all the way through the Bosphorus and into the Black Sea. The navigability of those straits in the run-up to the First World War became a greater and greater question for Russia. Had there been any possibility of the straits being closed by the Ottomans, it would have led to immense economic crisis for Russia, as it was one of Russia's few conduits, waterway conduits, out into Europe, what with most of the other ports being frozen over during winter. This becomes a key crisis during the Italo-Turkish War. So there is virtually no power in Europe, not Germany or Austria even, who have no moral high ground following the decision to allow Austria to annex Bosnia, that will stand in the way of Italy's conquest of the two provinces, Tripolitania and Cyrenaica. The Committee of Union and Progress, the revolutionary government that had seized power in 1909, following the Hamidian counter-revolt, the CUP had become an increasingly assertive voice of Ottoman nationalism and had spoken up for Ottomans who, across the empire, become increasingly alarmed and angered at the concessions made endlessly to Europeans and the threat to the empire. So there was no way that the CUP was going to agree to Italian designs on Libya or any Italian concessions that were asked for. The Italian government provoked a crisis with the Ottoman Empire by demanding the right to renovate Tripoli Harbour. When this was turned down, and this was seen as an immense snub to Italy, and Italian interests in Libya were being denied, it gave the Italian government a perfect excuse to declare war. On the 23rd of September, the Italian Foreign Minister, Antonio San Giuliano, sent a letter to the CUP, to the Sublime Porte in the Ottoman Empire, in Constantinople, that protested this and also said that Italian citizens were being mistreated in Tripoli. This was followed by another ultimatum saying that the Ottoman government should agree within 24 hours to an Italian occupation of Tripoli and Cyrenaica. And this, when it expired, gave the pretext for war. So it was pretty flimsy stuff. There was virtually no justification for Italy's actions. It was pure opportunism, but nothing less opportunistic than most of the actions by other European colonising powers in Africa, not to put them Italy or any other European on any different moral playing field. The problem for Italy, of course, is that the two provinces of North Africa were useless even to the Ottomans. They were very, very thinly populated. There were a number of ports along the Mediterranean, Tobruk, Benghazi, Derna, and Tripoli, that were very useful. But for the majority of the interior, there was virtually nothing there. Of course, oil hadn't been discovered there. There was the majority of the land was desert, and the peoples of that land were the Sanusi Bedouin tribes, who had been able to continue their lifestyle since really the Middle Ages. They had been untouched by modernity and existed as they had done 500 or 600 years earlier. The Ottomans wanted to hang on to these provinces for largely sentimental reasons, to continue the claim that the Ottoman Empire existed on three continents: Africa, Europe, and in Asia, though the European bit of that is becoming increasingly tenuous too. In the Anglo-French, or largely Anglo-French-led scramble for Africa, no other colonising power had laid its claim to Libya, and this should have been something of a clue for Italy. But there was more a sentimental and romantic and idealistic vision attached to Italian imperialism than there was anything that was embedded in deeper economic or strategic sense. And Italy found that it had to invest heavily in the fight that was previously thought to be easy and straightforward. Italy was not looking to take on a formidable opponent. There were 15,000 regular Ottoman troops in the two provinces. These were divided into one cavalry regiment, one field battalion, artillery battalion, and four infantry regiments, and these defences were faced with 34,000 amphibious troops and the Italian navy. And in addition, the Italians began to shell Tripoli on October the 3rd. They landed 1,700 troops and occupied the city, meeting very little serious resistance. However, when more troops landed at Tobruk, this was unopposed as well. There were 20,000 Italian troops that had been landed at Tripoli by mid-October and Tobruk. And then on October the 23rd at Benghazi, fierce fighting began. The main Ottoman forces attacked the Italian army there, and the war became quite a significant shooting war as opposed to a colonial walkover for the Italians. The war became a magnet across the Ottoman Empire for the best and the brightest young Ottoman officers, who were keen to make something of themselves and keen to be shown to be fighting the Empire's wars. Enver Bey became the commander of Cyrenaica, and Mustafa Kemal, later Kemal Ataturk, was a major, promoted to major, and was given command in Tripoli, but spent the war fighting at Tobruk and then Derna.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The Italians controlled the waterfront. They controlled the coast. They controlled ports, and in doing so, they were backed by artillery and naval guns. However, these don't fire very far inland, and it was the inland, the desert really, that the Ottomans occupy. They do this by making deals with the local Arabs, the Senussi Bedouin, and other Arab forces, and use these to pin down the Italian army whenever it moved up and down the coast. There is interesting echoes of the war, the British fight from 1916 onwards in the Hejaz in Arabia alongside the Arabs during the Arab Revolt that Britain inspires and provokes and assists. The result for the Italians is that their simple, cheap, easy walkover starts to become incredibly expensive. They have to pour in an additional 140,000 troops just to hold the coastline. The guerrilla tactics were very, very successful. They don't dislodge Italy, but they start to make the cost of occupation far more than Italy can possibly sustain in the long term. The war itself was one of the first modern wars of the 20th century. It was modern in the sense that it involved guerrilla warfare to face a colonial power. This was a strategy that colonised peoples throughout the 20th century would learn and would employ to great effect. The first such conflict was obviously the Boer War, but you can see echoes of this in everything from Vietnam to post-9/11 Afghanistan and Iraq. It was a war that saw the first use of air power in for military purposes, such as the use of airships to bomb Arab and Turkish positions. It involved trench warfare, though obviously so had the American Civil War 50 years beforehand. But the main harm to the Ottoman Empire was done on the high seas. The Italian navy was far stronger than that of the Ottomans, and the importance of naval power, obviously, in the Mediterranean, staging amphibious operations and attacking an empire with an extremely long coastline was very important. The Italian navy was seven times the tonnage of the Ottoman navy, and it meant that the Italian navy really controlled the Mediterranean as far as the war went. The Italians forced the Ottomans almost out of the Mediterranean, so much so that when Mustafa Kemal wanted to travel from Constantinople to Alexandria, he needed to travel incognito on a Russian warship disguised as a journalist. The loss of control of the seas meant that the war to save Libya was doomed, and the Italian navy had destroyed their Ottoman counterparts in several battles in the Red Sea, in the East Mediterranean, and the Italians also began to broaden their campaign, realising that it would be very difficult for them to rout resistance in Libya. They seized the Dodecanese Islands, including Rhodes, and on April the 18th, 1912, they began to shell the outer forts of the Dardanelles, and this threatened Constantinople itself. Now, this is where the conflict dramatically escalates. The CUP was willing to do anything in its power to protect its capital. It lacked any reserve naval power in the Aegean or the Mediterranean. And the only thing it can do is close the Dardanelles to all ships. They did this by laying mines and stretching chains across the water. And this was going to be a crisis not just for the Ottoman Empire, but also for the Russians. There were serious consequences in the Straits for Russia. The Dardanelles are the only warm water route from the Black Sea to the Mediterranean, and it cuts off the flow of goods out of Russia and imports in. Obviously, if you look at the Gulf of Finland and other ports, those freeze for significant portions of the year. And the Russian ports in the Gulf of Finland, St. Petersburg and others, have far less capacity than the ports such as Sevastopol along the Crimean coastline. Half of Russia's export trade went through the Ottoman Straits, and the link between the Black Sea and the Mediterranean meant that oil, manganese and 90% of all Russian grain, which was the majority, accounted for the majority of hard currency earnings, flowed from Russia out into the rest of the world. So the Dardanelles was the lifeline. It was on the equivalent of the British Empire's Suez Canal. In the other direction, everything that Russia needed for industrialisation, which was booming by 1912, made its way into the Russian Empire. The impact of this closure of the Straits was an economic crisis for Russia. The volume of Black Sea exports collapsed by a third, and so did revenue. This managed to place the economic boom that Russia had been experiencing into almost meltdown. Industry in the Ukraine essentially grinds to a halt. The balance of payment surplus that Russia had acquired between 1911 and 1913 collapses, and the industrialized economy that was exploding in Russia and might possibly have prevented revolution in the long run starts to grind to a halt. There are a series of crisis meetings about the closure of the Straits, and there was a plan to build dreadnoughts in the Black Sea and to have amphibious landings along the Bosphorus, with the end goal of seizing the Dardanelles for Russia and forcing the Ottoman Empire forever out of the Straits. The Ottomans began to rapidly rearm. They placed orders with British shipbuilders for dreadnought battleships that would help them to fend off the threat of Italy, or perhaps even Russia, or any other contender. This creates a regional arms race. Greece also begins to place orders for dreadnoughts, and the entire east end of the Mediterranean becomes rapidly and dramatically and alarmingly unstable. It's entirely possible of the many sites that could have been the beginnings of the First World War that it could have been here. The long guerrilla war that Italy now faced in Libya was met with brutal repression, as any imperial power faced with a guerrilla insurgency normally tends to behave. The Arab Bedouin, the Senussi, had particularly decided that they were going to cooperate and collaborate with the Turks, whom they had no love for and saw as a distant and colonising power, because there was a common Islamic solidarity there and a view that the Italian Christian invaders were far more worthy of their attention than the Turks in terms of warfare. And it was really just the hope of the Bedouin that if the Italians could be expelled, then they could return to their way of life with a very distant capital, imperial capital in Constantinople, paying them very little attention indeed, which is the way that they liked it.
Brutal killings were met with brutal killings. For example, on October the 23rd in 1911, 500 Italian soldiers were captured and slaughtered at Siari es Siat on the outskirts of Tripoli by Turkish troops. The next day, in the Tripoli massacre that followed, Italian troops murdered hundreds of civilians, going house to house, setting fire to a mosque with 100 refugees inside. The Italian government hoped to keep the news of this massacre from getting out to the wider world, but it became internationally known. And the Italians then began a propaganda offensive of showing pictures of murdered Italian soldiers at Siari es Siat to justify their revenge. In 1912, on October the 18th, Italy and the Ottoman Empire signed the Treaty at Ouichi near Lausanne. The treaty, different obviously from the 1923 Treaty of Lausanne, stated that the Ottomans would withdraw all military forces from Libya, but in return Italy would hand Rhodes and the other Aegean islands back. There would be some attempt to save some Ottoman face in Libya. Libya would have a special status. There would be an Ottoman regent in Libya and a judge who would represent the caliphate, ensuring that Islamic law and Islamic customs were still observed within what was now an Italian colony. And this perhaps was part of the process of reassuring the domestic population that they weren't about to be religiously colonised or converted either. The Ottomans would consult the Italian government before appointing the regent or any judges, and the Ottoman government would be responsible for their expenses. The cost overall to Libya was enormous. It was meant to cost $30 million a month to occupy Libya, which was a lot to start with. The costs reached $80 million a month, and the total cost to Italy is 1.3 billion lira, which is a billion more than Giolitti, the liberal prime minister of Italy, had estimated. And this wiped out a decade of essentially fiscal austerity in Italy, and a decade of belt tightening was really swept away by this excess. And the colony wasn't capable of producing the kind of wealth that would enable Italy to recoup its losses. Okay, so I hope you found that useful and interesting, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Do give us a good write-up on iTunes if you can, if you enjoy this, I'll catch you next time. Thanks very much, bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.